Chapter 43. My entire being seized in recognition of that voice, one I couldn't pull from the depths of my imagination, no matter how hard I tried. But it was him. That was my father's voice, calling my name. My eyes opened to misty darkness and golden lamplight, and I realized I wasn't awake. I was there once more, thrust back into the night that ended in blood-soaked screams. Poppy Flower, I know you're down there. Come out, he called. I need you to come to me, Poppy Flower. Chest twisting, I followed the sound of his voice, my lips moving, but the voice coming out of me sounding so much younger.
Papa, I was looking for you.
You found me. Like you always do. The shadows pulsed and thickened in front of me, taking shape. He was tall, the tallest person I knew. You shouldn't be down here, my baby girl. I stared up at him, wishing I could see his face clearly.
I wanted to go with you, Papa. I'm not scared.
But I was. I was trembling, and my tummy hurt. You're such a brave one, but you shouldn't be down here. He knelt, and his eyes that matched mine took up my whole world. Where is your brother?
With that woman who had cookies. But I want to be with you, and
you can't go with me. Cold hands landed on my shoulders, and his face seemed to piece together. Square jaw covered with several days' worth of hair. Mama called it a beard and often complained about it, but I saw her rubbing her fingers over it when she thought Ian and I weren't looking. Straight nose, dark brows, eyes like pine. You need to stay here and keep your mother and brother safe.
This is her?
Another voice asked from the darkness, a stranger's voice that wasn't completely unfamiliar.
This is my daughter.
Papa answered as he looked over his shoulder before smiling at me. But the smile was all wrong. Too tight.
She doesn't know. Understood.
The voice came again, still familiar. I didn't understand what he meant. All I knew was that he was going to leave, and I didn't want that.
What a pretty little flower.
The cold hands touched my cheeks.
What a pretty poppy.
Papa leaned in, pressing his lips to the crown of my head.
I love you more than all the stars in the sky.
My breath choked.
I love you more than all the fish in the seas.
That's my girl.
Shouts from outside drew him away from me.
Cora!
He called for Mama. Only he never called her that. She drifted from the shadows, her features pained as she took my hand in her cold one.
You should have known she would find a way down here.
She looked behind them, to where I couldn't see.
You trust him? I do. He's going to lead us to safety.
Papa turned to me.
Stay with your mama, baby.
Cold, cold hands touched my face again.
Stay with her and find your brother. I'll be back for you soon.
Mist poured in, taking Papa with it as it thinned out. I could hear his voice. He was speaking, but I couldn't make out what he said. I started to follow because I knew he wouldn't come back.
Don't look, Poppy. Don't look over there,
came Mama's hushed voice as she pulled on my hand. We must hide. Hurry. Confused, I tried to see her as she led me through the wispy void.
I want Papa.
Shh. We must be quiet. We must be quiet so Papa can come find us. I stumbled after her, tripping when she stopped. Get in, Poppy. I need you to get in and be very quiet, okay? I need you to be as silent as a mouse, no matter what. Do you understand? I shook my head.
I want to stay with you.
I'll be right here. Her damp, icy hands touched mine. I need you to be a big girl and listen to me. You have to hide. A sound came, a shout that caused Mama to disappear for a moment. You've got to let go, baby. You need to hide, Poppy. Mama froze. Time stilled as we stared at one another. Her skin thinned, revealing the delicate bones beneath. I shrank back.
"I'm sorry,"
a voice whispered. Mama was yanked away from me. I stumbled after her, but it was too late. There was nothing but mist, and all that remained was her voice, her words. "How could you?" "Mama," I whispered, stepping forward, unable to make out what she said.
"What a pretty little flower. What a pretty poppy. Pick it and watch it bleed. Not so pretty any longer."
A hand gripped my arm, the skin paler than mine, spotted with red as leaves rattled like dry bones and a low rumble filled the air. Shadows surrounded him as he tugged on my arm, the edges of his darkness washing over me, the edges of his black cloak covering me as I stumbled. He too was tall, but his face was a voice shrouded by cloth. I needed to see his face. I was thrust back toward the screeching and the howls and the fog, the mist that was around me and in me. It started to break apart, and the rumble grew below me in the ground, and a voice that sounded like spun gold and wind chimes whispered, "Stop! Stop! Stop!" over and over. But I couldn't stop. I needed to see his face. The man in dark moved away like a memory slipping through my fingers. I followed because it was important, this memory, because someone else had been there with Mama, someone who didn't want to be seen. I staggered forward. "Poppy!" The voice was a jolt, a strike of lightning, and my eyes opened. The mist had thickened in front of me. A whirling, churning mass. Specks of gold blinked in and out from within. "No farther," the voice whispered, a voice so pure it was almost unbearable to hear. "What you seek is not to be found here. Stop." The mist solidified, took form, and became more golden. It was tall. She was tall. Tumbling waves of hair, the color of fire, twined together. A face blurred, but eyes the color of molten silver burned through the mist, through me. "Go home. Take what is yours, and you will find what you seek there. The truth. Go home." "Who are you?" I whispered. "Who?" An arm snagged me around the waist without any warning, drawing me back against a warm, hard chest. There was the scent of dark spices and pine as my feet were swept out from under me, and we went down, landing hard on the ground. "Poppy! Gods! Poppy!" Castile turned me in his lap, one hand palming my cheek. He was breathing hard, his chest rising and falling rapidly as tendrils of mist drifted over his too pale face. "Dear gods, Poppy, what in the hell were you doing?" I looked around, seeing nothing but thick fog and Kieran standing above us, staring behind me and breathing just as heavily as Castile. Confusion swept through me. "What the hell were you doing?" Castile demanded again, giving me a shake. His breathing was harsh, forming quick clouds in the cold. You would have been broken, Poppy. Broken and shattered in a way I would never be able to fix." I didn't understand what he was talking about, but he looked like I'd never seen him before. Terrified. Eyes wide and luminous, even in the mist, the planes and angles of his face stark. He clasped my cheeks with his gloved hands. "I told you not to wander off."
I didn't, I told him. "I was sleeping. I was dreaming. I heard my father calling my name."
Fucking mist,
Kieran growled, waving a hand angrily through the thick white.
No, no, it was a dream, but it was real. I mean, it was pieces of the night the Kraven attacked. Someone else was there at the end.
I started to pull away, but Castile stopped me.
He was dressed, cloaked, and he was there that night.
I twisted in Castile's grip.
I was trying to see his face. If I could only see his face, I'd know who he was.
My lips parted as I stared into nothing. It wasn't a void simply absent of light. It was an end. A vast nothingness waited beyond the edge of a cliff.
Oh my gods,
I whispered, shuddering as I realized how close I'd come to stepping off into
nothing.
It was the mist,
Castile said, his tone too gentle as he guided my stricken gaze back to his.
She stopped me, I whispered.
What?
Didn't you see her? She stopped me. Oh my gods.
Castile smoothed his thumb across my cheek, along the scar there.
No one else was here. It was just you and the mist.
No, there was someone else.
I looked over my shoulder toward the emptiness. I heard her voice. She kept telling me to stop, and then she appeared in front of me. I turned back to Castile.
She was right there, where there is
nothing. She told me to go no farther, that the truth wasn't here. She told me to go home and to... I started shivering and I couldn't stop. To take what was mine, and that I would learn the truth.
It's okay,
Castile assured me, but the look he exchanged with Kieran said the exact opposite.
Let's head back to camp.
You didn't see her?
No, princess.
He kissed my forehead.
I only saw you about to...
He cut himself off.
It was only you.
As Castile helped me stand, I knew the dream had been peeling back the layers of time, revealing pieces long buried under trauma. And I knew I hadn't been alone. Someone or something had stopped me from walking off the side of the mountain. We started to... The rumble I heard earlier returned, this time louder. Kieran cursed as Castile whipped toward me. Before I could say a word, he lifted me in his arms and ran as far as we could make it, before he seemed to lose his balance. My heart seized as the mist scattered, thrown to the side. Castile's arm tightened around me as we fell into Kieran. He grabbed me, grabbed us, as we pressed into a tree that vibrated and rattled like a child's toy. Golden leaves, shaken free, drifted down toward us, down to the earth that shook and groaned.
What is happening?
I gasped, a hand clutching both Castile's and Kieran's cloaks. Castile turned to me, but I couldn't hear what he was saying over the rumbling. At any moment, it felt like the entire mountain would rip open and swallow us whole. My wide eyes met his as my heart thundered. And then it stopped. The leaves stopped falling as trees calmed and the ground stilled.
Is it over?
I whispered, after several moments of silence.
I think so.
Castile swallowed as his gaze lifted to where Kieran was slowly climbing to his feet behind me. Then his eyes met mine again.
Who did you say you saw? Who stopped you?
I don't know who it was, but it was a woman, I told him. Why?
Because that was a god,
Kieran said hoarsely,
returning to their place of rest.
Within the first hour of our journey out of the Skotos Mountains, the magic of the mist lifted.
The trees of Ios formed a glittering golden ceiling as we descended the mountain, and I was able to remove my gloves. By the second hour, I considered shrugging off my cloak. The steadily rising temperatures should have lifted my spirits, but my mind was still on that mist-drenched cliff. I had no idea if the cloaked man from my dream or his words were real or a hallucination. The latter seemed the likeliest explanation the longer I was awake. I'd never sleepwalked before, and I had no recollection of rising. That lent credence to the magic of the mountains preying upon me, but something or someone had stopped me, and Kieran had suggested that it had been Ios herself. I glanced up at the golden trees. Could it truly have been the goddess? That seemed too fantastical to believe.
"Would you like something to eat?"
Kieran asked, drawing me from my thoughts. Castile had asked the same question no more than 30 minutes ago, but my stomach was too full of too many knots to eat more than a few slices of bacon Castile had offered me that morning.
"If you would like something to drink, just let me know,"
Castile said, and I nodded. Throughout the morning, both had attempted to engage me in conversation or drown me in food and drink. My mind was in too many places, in the past and the future.
"I've been thinking about when we get to Atlantia," Castile announced, not too long after. "We need to resume those horseback riding lessons. You're going to need more than one if you plan to run into the capital of Solus on your own horse."
Excitement trickled through me. I would like that.
"I'm sure Seti would enjoy it."
Castile guided the horse around a narrow bend.
"He will probably expect daily visits from you. Though, I probably won't be happy," he went on. "I like you right here. I really hope you two don't turn into one of those couples who are constantly whispering sweet nothings at one another,"
muttered Kieran. My brows lifted.
"Since we've been married, she's already told me to shut up how many times? I'm pretty sure she's threatened to stab or punch me since then, too."
I did not recall either of those things.
"Well," Kieran said, "that's good news. But you're still going to hear me whisper things."
Castile's lips brushed the healing bite mark.
"Just extremely dirty things."
"Shut up," I said. Castile laughed as his arm tightened around me, but I saw Kieran's gaze flick over me to Castile, and I felt the prince nod behind me. Kieran rode ahead, going far enough that I could barely make out the shape of him and his horse. I tensed, knowing there was no other reason for Kieran's actions than to give us space. We rode in silence for a couple of minutes, and then Castile said,
"Last night wasn't your fault. It was the mist. Somehow it was triggered, and it went after you. I shouldn't have yelled at you afterward. I'm sorry."
The sincerity in his tone startled me enough that I turned my head toward his. "I didn't think you yelled at me. You were just,
what?
You were just scared."
"I wasn't scared. I was fucking terrified,"
he admitted.
"When we realized you were gone, we knew it wouldn't be easy to track you in the mist. I don't know how we found you so quickly, but thank the gods we did. Hell."
He coughed out a dry laugh.
"Maybe the gods actually have something to do with us finding you."
"Do you really think that was who I saw? Ios?"
"Honestly?"
His breath touched my cheek.
"We all felt the earth shake, and Nyctos did show us his approval. They seem to like you, princess."
I worried my lower lip. "I know you don't think my dream was real."
"I didn't say that. I think the mist got in your head, but that doesn't mean that what you saw or heard wasn't a real memory. It could have been real, and it could have been the mist. Both of those things. Either way, what happened last night wasn't your fault."
"Neither you nor Kieran almost walked off a cliff,"
I pointed out.
That doesn't mean we weren't affected.
You were? He was quiet, and then said,
I had strange dreams last night.
Like what? This time he was silent for even longer.
I dreamt that you were in the cage I was held in.
Oh. My stomach dipped.
And I couldn't free you.
He shifted behind me as if he weren't comfortable, and I suddenly wished we were face to face. My heart twisted in my chest. That's not going to happen.
I know, but the mist still preyed on my fear.
His hand squeezed my hip.
And convinced me otherwise. That was how I woke to find you gone, gasping for air in disbelief.
Why the mist would lead him to dream of such a thing unsettled me greatly.
Kieran woke like he was being chased by his own ghosts, roughly at the same time. I think the mist got to both of us in our sleep, and that was why we had no idea you'd awakened and left.
Was that why neither of them seemed to have known we'd all been curled up together earlier in the night?
What the mist did wasn't personal, and your susceptibility wasn't your fault. I should have been more aware. I should have expected something like that could happen.
It sounds like you had your hands full.
That's no excuse. I should have controlled the situation better.
I looked at him again over my shoulder, catching a glimpse of his hard jaw. Compulsions aside, you can't control everything.
Says who?
Says me. A smirk appeared.
Well, you have me there. I can't control you. If I could, I suspect life would be easier. But I don't even want to try, to be honest. You keep things intriguing.
Him and that damn word. Lips curving, I turned back around.
Princess?
What?
I saw that. That little grin.
He leaned in, dipping his chin against the side of my neck. Why are there times you still hide your smiles from me? His chest rose with a heavy breath as he sat back.
You have a beautiful smile. That and your laugh. And you never laughed enough as it was. But when you did,
I closed my eyes.
When you did, it was like the moment the damn mist finally cleared. Like when the first rays of sun break through the clouds after a heavy storm,
he said without an ounce of embarrassment.
Your laugh is as beautiful as your smile, and when I told you it was like hearing something familiar, it wasn't a lie.
Letting out a shaky breath, I opened my eyes. The gold leaves glistened even more brightly now. I didn't know that I was still doing that, and it makes me wonder if I did that before you. Smiling and laughter wasn't becoming of a maiden, according to the Duke.
I want to kill him again.
As do I murmured. We traveled on for a bit. Kieran was still far enough ahead that I couldn't see much of him. I thought about what I'd seen last night, what I did actually remember. Do you remember the night I said that creepy rhyme in my sleep?
Not something I'm likely to forget,
he replied dryly. My father used to say it to me. Castile stiffened behind me.
Come again?
Not the last bit, the part about picking the flower and watching it bleed, I told him. I still don't know who said that. It could have been the Duke, or some twisted part of myself. I don't know, but the first part, the pretty poppy part, I forgot that. He would say that to me. How could I forget that? His arm curled tighter.
I don't know, but bad memories always seem to have a way of being remembered over the good.
Wasn't that the truth?
Did you dream of your father?
I did. I remembered finding him that night. At least I think I did. My brow creased. No, I'm sure that was real. I was looking for him. That's how my mother found me. He used to call her Cora. That was another thing I'd forgotten.
Was that not her name?
Her name was Coralina.
That's a beautiful name, he said,
and it was.
What was your father's?
You don't know that?
No. I only knew that your name was Penelope at first, and it took a damn long time to discover you had a brother. And that was how I learned your last name, he told me. To be honest, I didn't look into your parents. I didn't think there was a reason to.
If you did, I doubt it would have given you any indication that I was half Atlantean. It still sounded strange to say that. His name was Leopold, but my mother called him Leo, or Lion.
Lion, he repeated. I like that. It fits that a lion would have such a fierce daughter.
I smiled then, and I only knew that Castile had seen it because he pressed his lips to the corner of my mouth. It felt like a thank you. His arm squeezed me.
But back to the gods seeming to like you. Nyctos gave us his blessing, basically. If that was Ios last night, and gods, it just might have been her. She woke to ensure your safety, he said, and there was a bit of awe in his voice. I'm going to repeat that, princess. A god woke from hundreds and hundreds of years of sleep to protect you. That is not something that has ever happened before, as far as I know.
My pulse skittered. Then why would it happen now? Why would they step in for me? As soon as that question left me, Duchess Tierman's words came back to me. You are chosen. Lies. Duchess Tierman had only spoken lies. I mean, I'm not special.
I'm going to have to disagree with the idea that you're not special. You are to me, and you are to the kingdoms of Atlantia and Solus, Castile said. Together, we can change the now and the future. That's not the only reason you're special, but that could be why you've caught the sleeping eyes of the gods.
He took my left hand in his. Our marked palms met, and there was that strange jolt of energy.
The gods favor you. Either way, this is good news, Poppy.
I threaded my fingers through his. If the gods accept me, how can your parents not? How can your... I caught myself. How can our people not?
Exactly.
He kissed my cheek. And for the first time since all of this started, hope sparked. Real hope that gaining the acceptance of his parents, of the people, would be possible. That they would stand beside us now when we returned to Solus to free his brother and to gain territory. That they would stand beside us afterward when we returned. And if one day I became more than a princess. A lightness filled me, a warmth that made it impossible for that coldness to return. We rode on then, eventually catching up to Kieran, and it wasn't too long before the sun-dappled gold-leaf trees gave way to lush green. I knew then that we'd passed the mountain, and we were truly at the edge of the actual kingdom of Atlantia. Gold Rock was exactly as I expected, a large round boulder that shimmered gold in the sunlight. Jasper and two others were already there. Quentin began waving the moment he saw us.
Glad to see you made it,
Emil said, bowing from where he stood by his horse.
And you?
The last part was directed toward me, and I recalled Castile's jealousy. I stopped my grin then.
What about me?
Kieran asked, dismounting.
Should I lie and tell you I'm thrilled?
The Atlantean replied, a hint of a grin on his face.
It would make me feel like my life is complete, Emil.
Nail and Delano haven't arrived yet,
Castile asked as he dropped down. He reached for me as he said,
I figured they'd beat all of us.
They haven't arrived yet,
Jasper answered,
looking tired as he leaned against the rock.
I thought you would beat us here.
Yeah? Jasper nodded as he covered a yawn with the back of his hand.
I cannot wait to become reacquainted with my bed,
he said with a sigh, as I started to unhook the buttons of my cloak.
Anyway, I hope the night was less eventful for you all. Nothing of interest happened with us,
Castile said, meeting my gaze as he brushed my hands aside. He began working the tiny buttons, and a wealth of gratitude rose, not for him unbuttoning my cloak, but for not mentioning what happened.
What about you all? Weird dreams,
Jasper muttered as he watched us, watched me.
As if that's all,
Emil commented as he rolled up the sleeves of his tunic.
I'm assuming you guys felt that last night, the shaking of the entire mountain.
Castile nodded but didn't elaborate. I felt Jasper's attention focused on us, all the wolven that were present, actually, as Castile folded my cloak and placed it in one of the saddlebags. The rest of our group arrived. None of them looked like they'd slept well, and it was strange to see Beckett in his mortal form and so subdued as we eventually continued on. The patchy grass gave way to rolling hills that were a lush, vibrant green, and it wasn't too long before I wished I'd changed into the sleeveless tunic. Lifting a hand, I wiped a fine sheen of sweat from my forehead. Is it warm like this always? I'm not complaining if it is.
It's warm here, near the sea,
Castile answered, and I looked around, wondering what body of water he spoke of. But farther inland, when you near the mountains of Phnictos, you'll see more seasonal changes and colder temperatures. I started to ask where this sea was, when I saw them. Graceful, gleaming white stone columns that stretched so far into the sky that if there had been clouds, they would have reached beyond them. A tumbling motion in my chest took my breath. The Pillars of Atlantia, I whispered.
Yes.
Castile's voice was soft in my ear. A sense of wonder washed through me, one that ran deeper than curiosity as we drew closer. I could see shadowy grooves in them, markings in a language I'd never seen before. The pillars were more than just markers, or even the resting place of Theon and Lila. They were connected to a wall of the same stone that appeared to be limestone and marble. It was as high as any rise and continued on farther than I could see. We crested the hill, and I saw between the two pillars, seeing what awaited. Tiny bumps rose all over my skin, as a hum seemed to vibrate in my blood. In a long-forgotten hymn, Castile's chin grazed the side of my neck, followed by his lips.
Welcome home, princess.
Chapter 44. Home. Was this what the voice had meant last night? Was this truly home? I wanted it to be more than I ever realized. We passed through the pillars, my heart thundering as I soaked in the sights before me with disbelieving eyes. The first thing I noticed were the people along the walls, just inside the pillars. How could I not see them? There were at least 100, dressed in black sleeveless tunics and pants. Swords with gold handles were fitted to their sides. Crossbows, like the one damaged in the fight with the Dead Bones clan, were strapped to their backs. The moment they saw Castile, recognized him, they bowed, one after another, in a wave. But it was those who stood on the ledges above that drew my attention. Women. There were more guardians. They dropped to one knee in succession, placing their fists over their heart. I knew my eyes were wide. I knew I was staring, but all of them were staring too. The men below and the women above. At us. I suddenly wished that I still wore my cloak, even with how warm the air was here, or that my hair was free. Maybe then I wouldn't feel so exposed. My scars clearly displayed to these strangers' eyes. Strangers I wanted to be accepted by. I looked forward, and then I wasn't thinking of the scars or being accepted. Leafy green trees lined the wide road, one smoother than any I knew of in Solus. It was made of some kind of dark stone that seemed fused together. The trees spread out into dense thickets of a lush forest. And ahead? A city sprawled ahead, dipping and flowing with the valleys and hills. A city twice the size of Carcedonia. White and sand-colored structures gleamed under the sun, arcing gracefully with the landscape. Some square and others circular. Some rose high, stretching into sleek towers, while others were buildings as wide as they were tall, and some remained closer to the ground. They reminded me of the temples in Solus, but they weren't fashioned to mirror the night, but to reflect the sun, to worship it. The roof of every building that I could see was green. Trees rose from them, vines swept down their sides, and bursts of color came from all sides. Unlike the capital of Solus, where the city was stone and dirt, flashes of green surrounded buildings. Just as it had been in Spessa's End, no building appeared stacked on top of one another, crowded to the point where they could barely fit. At least not from what I could gather, from this distance. Beyond the city, where specks of white grazed in open pastures, past the heavily wooded area that followed, was a mountain that did disappear into the clouds. And in the face of that mountain were 11 statues that had to be as tall as the Athenaeum in Macedonia. Each one held a lit torch from their outstretched arm, the flames burning as brightly as the setting sun. These were the gods, all of them, watching over the city or standing guard. I couldn't even begin to figure out how those statues were built to that size, raised onto the mountain, or even how those torches were lit, how they remained lit. Sion's Cove is beautiful, isn't it? Castile didn't need to ask. It was the most beautiful city I'd ever seen, and I could imagine what the capital looked like.
You can't see the sea from here, but it's beyond the trees to our right.
Thoughts of warm sand and salty air tugged at my heart as I followed his gaze. I saw the tops of columns through the trees. What is in there?
The chambers of Nyctos, he answered. You can see the seas of Sion from here, and the isles of Bele, he added. And yes, the goddess of the hunt slumbers there.
I have so many questions.
There's not a single person surprised to hear that, Kieran remarked.
Delano laughed as he turned his head to the sky, basking in the sun. A bell tolled, startling me. Leaves rattled as a flock of birds took flight from the nearby trees, their feathers a vivid green and blue. The bell tolled 5 more times. I tensed. Is something happening? I looked around and no one appeared concerned. I only ever heard a bell ring when there was an attack or something afoot. Jasper smiled at me.
It's only telling the time. It's 6 in the evening, he explained. It'll ring every hour until midnight and then resume at 8.
Oh, that was clever. Ahead, I noticed someone on horseback riding toward us.
Castile slowed the horse as Jasper said, Here comes the welcoming party of one.
Who is it? I asked.
Alistair, he told me. He must have been waiting for us.
The advisor to the king and queen arrived within a few minutes, a smile softening the deep scar in his forehead.
You cannot believe how relieved I am to see you, all of you,
Alistair said, and the strangest thing happened. A shivery feeling of icy fingers danced across the back of my neck. Gods, he sounded so much like Victor, but
you must tell me what became of Spessa's End.
Alistair drew his horse up to our side, clasping Castile's hand.
But I must warn you,
His voice dropped low.
Your father and mother are here, and your arrival was spotted. They know you've come home.
My stomach fell beyond my feet. I hadn't planned on meeting his parents this quickly. They were supposed to be in the capital. Castile was of like mind.
What are they doing here?
They came as soon as they learned of the trouble in Spessa's End. Your damn father was about to cross the mountains. I assured him that our forces would make it.
He trailed off as he caught sight of the ring on Castile's left hand. He turned Castile's palm upward. His skin blanched.
You did it?
He twisted in his saddle, looking toward my left hand. His gaze met mine.
You actually did it?
We did, Castile said. Just like we told you. You missed it,
Jasper chimed in as I picked up on the disbelief and concern radiating from Alistair, which wasn't surprising. He'd wanted us to wait until Castile spoke with his parents.
Day turned to night at the end of the ceremony. Nyctos gave his approval.
Alistair blinked as if he hadn't expected that.
Well, that is good news. Perhaps that will be of aid when the king and queen are made aware. But I need to speak with you, Castile, in private.
Whatever you need to say to me, you can say in front of my wife,
Castile replied, and my already unstable stomach flipped.
Wife, why was that such a shock to hear?
It was a pleasant surprise, though.
This is a conversation regarding the kingdom, and I mean no offense, but she is not a part of the crown yet,
Alistair replied,
nor privy to such information.
Castile stiffened behind me, and I knew he was about to push back, and the last thing I wanted was him to be standing here arguing with Alistair about what I was privy to when his parents arrived.
It's okay. No offense taken, I said, tapping his arm. I would like to stretch my legs a bit anyway.
Castile wasn't at all happy about that, but Beckett offered,
I can show her the chambers of Nyctos. It's not very far from here, he said. That is, if you'd like.
I would like that, I readily agreed, latching on to the offer as if it were a lifeline. That's what I would like to do.
Then that is what you will do,
Castile replied. My heart was pumping so fast as Castile dismounted and helped me get down that I wouldn't have been surprised if I fainted. How embarrassing would that be? The first time to faint at the feet of my father and mother-in-law, the former king who still planned to use me as a message. But that would change. It had to. Not just because the gods favored me, but because what Castile and I shared was real.
One second.
Castile motioned at Beckett as Quentin went to the young wolven's side. He drew me slightly away from the others, under the shade of one of the nearby trees.
I'm sorry about this, he said. I had no idea they'd be here. I wanted to give you some time before I introduced you. That was what I planned.
I know, and honestly, I'm glad that Alistair was here to warn us, and that he wants to talk to you. It will give me time to... I don't know.
I felt my cheeks flush. Prepare myself.
You don't need to be nervous.
Really? I replied dryly.
I'm trying to be helpful.
A half grin appeared and then vanished.
We've faced scarier things than parents caught off guard, and we will face far more frightening things. Just remember that this...
He picked up my left hand and turned it over.
Is real.
He said, echoing my earlier thoughts.
We're real, no matter what.
I stared down at the dazzling gold swirl on my palm. No matter what. Curling a finger under my chin, he lifted my head, and his lips found mine. He kissed me, and it was no short peck on the lips. People watched us, but Castile took his sweet time, and by the time he lifted his head, I felt faint for a whole different reason.
No matter what, he repeated.
Nodding, I pulled away from him and turned to where Beckett waited, shifting his weight from one foot to the other.
Poppy,
I turned back to Castile, and the moment I saw him, I felt the breath I took catch in my throat. The way he stared at me, the intensity in his fiery golden eyes, rooted me to the spot. What I felt from him, it tasted like the smoothest chocolate and the sweetest berries. Castile's chest rose with an uneven breath.
I'll come for you.
I love you. That was what I thought Castile was going to say. That was what I felt from him. But those words didn't pass his lips. They hadn't passed mine either. Whatever disappointment I might have felt was quickly lost to wonder as Beckett led me through the woods. The Wolven hadn't been an excited chatterbox, and I could tell he was still wary of me. I picked up the faint trace of fear from him, and I imagined he was challenging himself to get past that by offering to take me to the chambers. The trees were full of the calls and chirps of birds, but as Beckett had said, the chambers weren't that far. We left the wooded area fairly quickly. The structure rose against the deep blue of the sky, the limestone and marble a glistening white in the sun. We walked through a short field of tiny blue and yellow flowers. The closer I got, the more I realized how large the temple still was. It was nearly the length of Castle Tierman. Good gods, I said, glancing at Beckett. This thing is huge. He nodded as he quickly glanced at me.
It's one of the largest temples here.
Why is it called the Chambers? I asked, as we climbed the steep steps, welcoming the distraction. Vines scaled the wide steps all the way to the top where they wrapped around the columns.
It's because there are tombs underneath.
I stopped near the top and looked at him. Seriously? A nervous giggle left him.
Yeah, the entrance to them is on the side. It's where some of the ancient ones have been buried. The deities, I mean.
Sorry, graveyards and tombs kind of weird me out, I admitted, as I started walking again.
Same.
A quick smile appeared.
Especially these. You feel, I don't know, like those who are entombed are watching you.
A warm, salty breeze reached us as we came to the top. I didn't know where to look first. Pebbles and much larger rocks were scattered across the Atlantean crest that had been engraved into the stone floors. Statues of the gods stood between the columns, each one with an arm outstretched. Nyctos was the tallest of them all, and he stood in the very center of the temple, the toes of his feet brushing the Atlantean crest. All were sculpted so it appeared the sun rose behind them, and they held torches in their stone hands, empty of flames, of life. Tearing my gaze from them, I walked to one side. The beauty of what I saw was stunning. I'd never seen water so clear. Bright blue, green, and even red coral was clearly visible underneath. Farther out, where the water deepened, it was a shade as blue as the sky above. I knew there were other things to see, like the trees of Ios that were visible from the chambers, but I couldn't tear my gaze from the sea. The next breath I took was steady and calming, as if I hadn't taken a breath as deep as this one in, well, forever. I blinked, realizing there were tears in my eyes. Normally, I wouldn't get choked up by seeing a body of water, but it felt like home.
Thank you for healing my legs,
Beckett said, startling me. As terrible as it was, I'd forgotten that he was there.
I know I said that before, but I just wanted to say it again. You have no idea what you did for me.
It took me a moment before I trusted myself to speak. The poor kid was already uncomfortable around me. He didn't need me to start sobbing all over him. You didn't need to thank me before, and you don't need to do it now. I touched the warm stone of a column. I'm glad I could help. Off in the distance, I could make out the Isles of Belle. They appeared large, as if they could house two or three towns the size of Spessa's End. There was something at the highest peak of the center island. A temple? I started to ask Beckett what it was, when I realized that he hadn't responded to me. Pulling my gaze from the sparkling waters, I turned, and every muscle in my body immediately locked up. Beckett was gone. But I wasn't alone. Several people stood by the statue of Nyctos, mostly men, but a few women. There were at least a dozen, a mix of Atlantean and mortal, not a single Wolven among them, but they were all dressed the same, wearing loose white pants and tighter sleeveless shirts. Their arms were adorned with golden bands similar to those I'd seen on the Guardians in Spessa's End. Their attire, the way they stared at me, reminded me of the priests and priestesses in Solus, except the priests and priestesses didn't carry weapons. All of them wore a golden, narrow, long dagger strapped across their chests. Goosebumps pimpled my skin. I recognized none of them, but I knew what they were feeling. Anger surged from them, thickening the air, and it mixed with my stinging disbelief as what was happening began to sink in. Instinct flared to life.
"You shouldn't be here,"
an Atlantean said, taking a step forward.
"You should have never crossed the Skotos Mountains. Your mere presence is a taint, maiden."
These people knew exactly who I was. I quickly glanced at the exit, the only exit. They blocked it. And their anger, their hatred, it kept stretching out toward me, coating my skin like a two-course blanket, filling the back of my throat with hot acid. I severed the connection, picturing each cord being snipped away until there was nothing inside me but my pounding heart. Once I locked them out, I scanned the temple again, this time looking for any sign of the young Wolven. There was none. And everything inside me knew what had been done, even if I didn't understand why. He'd been so happy when I first met him. I'd healed him. No other Wolven had been unkind toward me. But he had led me here. He'd offered to bring me here, and then he'd left me. Left me to those who I'd never seen or met before, but who hated me nonetheless. But they did not choose you. My skin flushed hot and then cold. It had been a trap, one of opportunity or something planned, I had no idea, and I didn't know how this had been orchestrated, if these people had been waiting or for how long. But it didn't change what this was, the betrayal, the disappointment, and the bone-deep hurt sank its razor-sharp claws into me. I stared at the nameless faces, feeling as if my chest had cracked open. It had been so silly of me to want these people to accept me, and so incredibly naive for me to take that flicker of hope and hold on to it. I wanted to scream. I wanted to... Gods! I wanted to cry. And I wanted to rage. But I couldn't. I needed to stay calm. This was a trap. But they knew who I was, and that meant they also had to know that I was Castile's wife. They couldn't seriously think to harm me. I needed to de-escalate the situation somehow. The mortals wouldn't be a problem. The Atlanteans standing before them could become one, however. Still, I lowered my right hand to where my sweater hid the Wolven dagger. "I'm sorry. I didn't know this area was forbidden, and I don't know what you've heard about me, but I'm not an ascended, and I never chose to be the maiden. I fought against them at..." "You're something worse," a woman interrupted, and I realized she held something in her closed fist. "We know what you really are. We know how you managed to gain the prince's trust. Empath. Soul-eater." A prickly wave of dread skated over my skin. None of these people had been in Spessa's End or at New Haven. Had Alistair told someone? I doubted that Kieran would have during his brief return.
At the moment, none of that mattered. What did was that what Alistair had said was right. So was Castile, even though he hadn't wanted to say it. And I already suspected as much. Because of who I was and who I wasn't, they wouldn't accept me. And they feared me. And that fear fed their hatred. That was the most dangerous of all. "I'm not that either," I said, watching the woman's hand, their hands. A man held something too. "I cannot feed off emotional energy or heighten fear. I didn't even know what I was until—"
"Close your mouth, whore,"
the Atlantean spat. I blinked, shocked into silence by the slur.
"You speak out of both sides of your mouth," he continued. "Your lies may have worked on the others, but they will not work on us."
"You will not find what you seek here," a woman said, and I immediately thought of the voice I'd heard last night. "You will not destroy Atlantia from within. You may have warped the prince's mind, but you will not succeed with us." "I haven't done anything to him." My fingers curled under the hem of my sweater.
"Other than attempt to kill him,"
another challenged, as the clouds formed above us. Well, that was hard to defend, and also something none of them should have known.
"Or led an army of ascended to the walls of Spessa's End,"
another claimed. And that was also hard to defend.
"People died, didn't they?"
"People had."
"The Ascended disguised you as a maiden, sending you right into the heart of Atlantia,"
the Atlantean man said, the one who had spoken first.
"We will not let you destroy Atlantia. We will not allow you to destroy us all, whore of the Ascended."
"You have no idea what you're talking about." I fought my anger and was losing. I was too damn hurt, and I refused to stand here and listen to them accuse me of working with the Ascended. I had killed countless people to defend Spessa's End. I had been prepared to end my own life to protect that town. "I speak nothing but the truth when I say I am sorry for all that you may have suffered at the hands of the Ascended. I can even understand your distrust and dislike of me. But if one of you calls me a whore one more time, you will regret it."
"Because of the prince," the Atlantean sneered. "Do you think we're not willing to die to protect our kingdom even from him? The prince is already lost to us, just as Malik was."
"Your prince is not lost to you." My fingers brushed the sheath of the dagger as the sun hid behind a dark cloud. "And it is not my husband you have to worry about. It's me." Focused on the Atlantean, I'd forgotten about the woman, about what she held. I didn't even see her lift her arm. It was such a stupid misstep on my part. Victor would be so disappointed. Pain exploded, stunning me. I gasped, clutching my throbbing shoulder as I looked down. A rock. She had thrown a rock. I almost laughed, only because she could have thrown something worse, like the dagger strapped to her chest. Anything more dangerous than a rock. "That hurt," I bit out, as the clouds darkened, becoming fat and heavy. The scent of rain filled the air, and in the distance, the warning of thunder rumbled. "But seriously, a rock?"
"You think we fear you?"
the Atlantean male said, withdrawing his dagger.
"You're not a threat when you can't touch us. We know how soul eaters feed. We know how you sense emotion. You must come into contact with flesh."
That was not how that worked. "There appears to be a lot of things you have no understanding of." I unsheathed the dagger. To hell with making the situation worse. "I am not your enemy, but you are quickly becoming mine. But you're not anything but a scarred whore for the Ascended," the woman replied calmly as thunder clapped closer now. Before I could even question how I could be both the maiden and a whore, a new pain erupted along the side of my head,
so sudden and shocking that I dropped the dagger as I staggered back. I quickly realized that the stoning was only meant to incapacitate me so they could get closer. Another rock hit me in the stomach, then my leg, my arms. A streak of lightning hit the sky over the sea. Thunder boomed, echoing through the columns of the temple as sudden agony lanced my brow when a rock connected with my forehead and the scarred skin there. So sharp and startling that it sent me to my knees. My hold on my senses loosened and then shattered. It was like a crevice cracked wide open in me as wet warmth trickled down my temple. Ascended trash, soul eater, whore. Words fell in time with their rocks, but it was what I felt from them that landed heavier blows. Enough, I whispered. Their anger and hatred beat at me as I looked down, seeing my blood falling against the stone. I couldn't breathe. Their raw emotions were an endless rolling tide, and underneath it was a hum, a whirring from the very core of me. My skin vibrated, just like it had when the soldiers surrounded Castile and before the Wolven had arrived. Something red splashed on the ground, tainting the pearly stone. More blood. Another drop joined it, seeping into the cracks. The marble trembled under my feet as roots appeared in the stone, thin as fragile veins. They crept out from the crack. I blinked a sting from my eyes, and the roots disappeared. Another splash of crimson fell, and another, this one farther from where I stood. It was blood, but it wasn't mine. It fell from above. The skies bled. Chapter 45. Dizzy, I lifted my head to see blood falling like rain from the crimson-hued cloud that stretched over the temple and the cove. It splattered the pristine white of the temple floor, dampening my clothing and turning the white clothing of those who stood before me pink. It seemed to stun them as they cast their gazes to the sky.
"Tears of an angry god," someone whispered.
My gaze shifted to the blur of unfamiliar faces.
"It's an omen,"
the Atlantean who had unsheathed his dagger announced.
"They're showing us that they know what must be done and what we will face."
"Enough," I said again.
"For Atlantia," a woman said.
She was closer, a mortal with Atlantean blood and crimson streaking her face. An Atlantean stood beside her, his lips peeled back to expose his fangs, and the hatred in his snarl reminded me of a craven, of an ascended.
"From blood and ash," the Atlantean raised the dagger. "We will rise again, my brothers and sisters."
The hum in my blood grew, the buzz in my skin intensified, stronger than what I'd felt before, and that ancient sense of knowing rose deep from my pain. The cords I could see so clearly rippled out from me, connecting me to each and every one of them. It gathered all their burning hatred and scorching loathing, their acidic bitterness and thirst for vengeance after years, decades, centuries of pain inflicted upon them. And I took it. I took it all inside me, letting it pour into every vein, every cell, until it choked me, until I tasted the blood, until I drowned in it. Until I tasted death, and it was sweet.
"Enough!"
I screamed as the connection to them, to all of them, crackled with energy. The cords that had always been invisible lit up in silver, becoming visible to not only my eyes but theirs.
"Your eyes,"
the Atlantean with the dagger gasped, staggering back. Moonlight glow spilled out of me, seeping over the stone and rippling into the charged air as I stood. Thunder rolled endlessly, shaking the temple and the nearby trees.
"Dear gods,"
the Atlantean whispered, his dagger slipping from his fingers to fall soundlessly to the tile.
Forgive us.
Too late. The cords connecting me to all of them contracted as I threw out my arms. All the hate, the loathing, the bitterness, and vengeance intensified, tripled, and then erupted from me, traveling through each of those cords, finding their way back home. Lightning streaked overhead like a thousand screams as the group's rancid emotions choked them. Hair blew back from faces, clothing pulled taut against bodies. Feet slid over stone, and they went down. One after another, as if they were nothing more than fragile saplings caught in a windstorm. I watched as their vileness continued feeding back to them. I watched as they clutched at their heads, writhing and spasming, screaming and shrieking until the bones in their throats caved in under their contempt. And then, nothing. Silence in and outside of me. I was empty again. No hatred, no anger, no pain. Empty and cold. I sucked in air, staggering as the silver cords connected to them sparked and fizzled out. The rain eased and then stopped, forming pinkish puddles across the floor. Those on the stone didn't move. They didn't thrash and squirm. Red. There was so much red around them that ran in rivulets to the puddles, deepening the pinkish hue. They lay still, their bodies twisted and contorted, as if they had been thrown about by the gods themselves. Eyes wide and mouths hanging open, hands clenched tightly around rocks, or their crushed throats. I felt nothing for them. The bells tolled again, this time rapidly, with no pauses between the gongs, and the temple shuddered. Stone cracked behind me. The scent of blood and rich soil spilled into the air. A shadow fell over me, stretched across the floor like hundreds of bare bone fingers. Slowly I turned around, and my gaze crawled up thick, glistening bark and across the bare limbs of a massive tree. Tiny golden buds formed all over and blossomed. Thousands unfurling to reveal blood-red leaves. A blood forest tree stood, rooted where my blood had first fallen. Movement snagged my gaze. My head jerked to the left, and whatever breath I managed to get into my lungs fled. They were sleek shadows prowling up the wide steps, hesitating there, surveying the bodies on the stone floor. Heads turned to one another, pairs of keen frosted eyes lifted to where I stood before the blood tree, breathing heavily. I tensed. Behind them, larger ones pressed forward. Two, three, four. So many more. There were dozens, maybe even 100, perhaps more. Each one greater than the one before them. Their fur glossy in the sunlight as the clouds overhead scattered, their eyes an incandescent blue I'd never seen before. Their ears perked and nostrils twitched as they scented the air, the blood, as they scented me. I recognized the shock of Delano's white fur, and then my heart twisted as I saw Kieran, his unnaturally bright eyes fixed on me. On the silvery light that still glowed around me. Claws clicked on stone as they came forward, stepping over the fallen, heads down low, slowly moving around me, circling me, making room. Good gods, the color of steel. The wolven was double the size of any I'd seen, nearly as tall as me, maybe even taller, and it stalked forward. Paws the size of two of my hands. It was Jasper. During the battle at Spessa's End, I hadn't realized how large he was. The silver wolven stopped in front of me,
meeting my wide-eyed stare with those unnerving, glowing eyes, and I knew if I ran or reached for the fallen dagger to protect myself, I wouldn't make it an inch. A shivery sense of awareness drew my gaze from Jasper, from the wolven, and beyond the statue of Nyctos. Castile came up the steps, his dark hair wet and wind-blown, as if he'd run faster than the wind could travel. Faint traces of red streaked his face as he stalked forward, features stark and chin dipped low. It struck me then, sort of dumbly, that Castile looked like some kind of god standing there, in black, with his swords strapped to his sides, and the near-brutal hardness that had settled into the striking planes and angles of his features. He reminded me of the god Theon. Jasper turned to the prince. The other wolven stopped circling me. Castile's chest rose and fell heavily as he stepped around a body, stopping only when Jasper let out a low rumble of warning. He drew up short, taking in me, the wolven, the bodies, and the lit torches. His eyes widened a fraction as something akin to understanding flickered across his face.
"My gods,"
he uttered. Golden eyes met and held mine as Castile crossed his arms, withdrawing his swords. Air lodged in my throat as pressure clamped down on my chest, squeezing my heart. Castile hadn't arrived alone. Others were climbing up the steps. Nail, Emil, Alistair, familiar faces, nameless ones. My senses flickered to life in me, sensing fear and awe and so many different emotions that I was afraid it would all overwhelm me again, and I didn't even know what I'd done. Growls rumbled from the other wolven as two more crested the top of the stairs, followed by several dressed as the ones sprawled across the ground, their golden swords drawn. I should be concerned by them. But it was the two who had entered before them that captured my attention. A tall, blonde man, broad of shoulder and dressed in a white tunic, stained from the blood rain, whose cut jaw, straight nose, and high cheekbones were painfully familiar. He drew up short, his hand going to the sword at his side.
"Impossible,"
breathed the woman who stood beside him, her hair a glossy onyx, tucked back in a loose knot at the nape of her neck. The shape of her eyes and her mouth was also familiar, and she was beautiful, absolutely as breathtaking as the disbelief that poured from her. Even if it weren't for the similarities, the crowns of twisted, bleached bone would have told me who they were. Queen Iloana's hand pressed to the bodice of her simple, sleeveless lavender gown, a gown stained by the rain that had fallen.
"Hawk?"
The silvery glow around me pulled back and faded, seeping into my skin as my entire body shuddered.
"What have you done?"
she asked, her eyes as vibrant as her son's as she stepped forward.
"What have you brought back?"
"It's not too late,"
Alistair spoke, startling me.
"It's not, Iloana."
"Yes."
Her gaze swept back to me, to where the wolven surrounded me, and then to her son. My gaze swiveled back to Castile. He stood right there, no more than a dozen feet or so from me, but it seemed like an impossible distance, an impassable gulf. He stood right there. Hawk. Castile. The Prince of Atlantia. The Dark One. My husband. My heartmate. Castile lowered to one knee, crossing the swords over his chest as he bowed his head between the V of the deadly sharp blades. A stuttered heartbeat passed, and he lifted his chin just enough that he saw me. The wolven sank onto their haunches, heads bowed, but their lips peeling back in snarls as those behind the king and queen quietly advanced.
"Yes, it is."
His mother spoke again,
reaching up and curling her fingers around the twisted bones. Queen Ilawana removed her crown, and with wide eyes, I watched her place it on the temple floor, at the feet of the statue of Nyctos. With a whoosh of air, flames roared from the stone torch of Nyctos, flickering and dancing in the wind. The other torches followed suit, fire sparking to life, and the bones of the crown shimmered, the bleached whiteness of them cracking, slipping away and turning to ash, revealing the gilded bones underneath.
"Lower your swords,"
she commanded, her chin lifting even as she lowered to one knee, even as a potent, helpless sort of rage drenched the space around her, one that carried the stench of a long-buried fear come to fruition.
"And bow before the last descendant of the most ancient ones, she who carries the blood of the King of the Gods within her. Bow before your new queen."
We hope you've enjoyed our presentation of A Kingdom of Flesh and Fire by Jennifer L. Armentrout, performed by Stina Nielsen. Performance copyright 2020 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc., all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please visit our website at www.brilliancepublishing.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.